laid back.
With my mind on my money.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Stucky here. Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 8, week 7, part 2. With me, as always, is Colin Wilson. I believe in the country this week. What's going on, Colin?
I am in the country, which means I have cable TV, and I was watching the Yankees. See, I'm Catholic, and I know what purgatory is, and I felt like I was in purgatory because I just watched Brett Gardner have like a 32-pitch at bat, and I thought my goddamn DVR was on repeat. He just kept fouling stuff off like crazy.
Unbelievable bat. The funny thing about that is, you know, we were saying we were going to record this podcast at 11, but I had the under in that game, which I had a sweat, even though there was 30, a major league record, I think 32 strikeouts, 31 or 32 strikeouts in the game, and I had a sweat all the way until the end, and I thought I was going to be doomed with the stupid ass fielder's indifference, go to second bloop, meaningless bloop, but luckily Chapman struck him out. But we were texting each other. Yeah, let's just do the podcast in like 15 minutes at the end of this ninth inning. And the ninth inning took the top of the ninth inning, I think, legitimately took 30 minutes. Because that Frazier at bat took 4 years. And then you had the Brett Gardner bat, which unbelievable at bat. I mean, because then that just changes the whole complexion of the ninth inning. Because you saw that Chapman came out a little, you know, he was a little rusty. You sit for a half hour. So if he sat for 25 minutes, and they don't end up getting a run, you know, it's a whole different ballgame with the crowd. And, you know, who knows after what happened there with Chapman last year.
It would have been heartbreaking if you would have lost that under on Todd Frazier taking an extra base.
Oh, my God. I was sick. Yeah, especially the team that was the number one defensive fielding percentage team in the majors this year. And they had, you know, two errors this game. But I did get a tip right before from, I consider a reliable source to me, but I couldn't really verify it. I did tweet out before the game that Kluber's back is hurt. I kept my under just because you had these two pens are ridiculous. You could have a starter get lit up and then you still hit your under because the pens go, you know, each four innings, especially in an elimination game. Yankees 4-0, by the way, in elimination games already in the postseason. But yeah, I got a tip that Kluber's back was hurt, and that was the reason game one. And then he comes out, and I'm like, he looks decent, but he gave up a home run. Then he gave up another home run. And then in that inning that he got pulled, you know, I mean, he was kind of – I mean, sorry, did I say back? I meant to say shoulder. He was, like, kind of shaking his shoulder. So it looked like he did hurt his shoulder because that was back-to-back bad starts. And the first time he's had back-to-back bad poor starts since 2012. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there was obviously something wrong with him. So I think that if there's anything – Indians fans can take solace in, it's that even if you did win this game, I don't think you're winning at all without a healthy Kluber who's, you know, going to win the Cy Young this year. But yeah, it's going to be Yankees Astros, where can the Yankees get to the fifth with that bullpen with a lead? And you know, who knows? And with all the shots, they're playing with house money now, 4-0 in elimination games.
I hope not. I had a 14-1 on the Astros back from last February, and I took it because my Royals came back to beat them 2 years ago, and I thought, you know, this team is young, they're hot, they've got some of the best players in the league, their pitching is you know, back in the spring I thought their pitching was going to be excellent with you know, they had some players on pitch count last year with McHugh, and they were really primed up to go this year. And I took the Astros at the beginning of the season, and so I'm riding that one pretty. You know, I'll be biting my fingernails off against the Yankees and whoever the National League produces.
Yeah, I'll tell you that in Major League Baseball, they'll be rooting for the Yankees because if you have a Yankees versus either L.A., Chicago, or D.C., that's a ratings bonanza. Compared to Houston. I mean, Houston's a big market too, but it's just not going to have as big of a draw as if you have Yankees Dodgers or Yankees Cubs. So it'll be interesting to also watch the game five, back-to-back nights of game fives, which is awesome. So we'll see what happens with Nats. I have Nats plus 210. I took them after they lost game one. I think I have to get out and just, you know, for at least my risk, because it's so DC to force the elimination game at home and lose that, like in every sport. So we'll see. But the Cubs pen's a little bit messy here. Anyway, enough about baseball. One other topic about tonight. I know that we gave out South Alabama on the week one podcast earlier this week. Talk about some – that was some silly steam. I mean, I think it closed at 18 and a half. It was never in doubt.
Yeah, I think it got up to 19 at some point, and then I didn't put it out on my Twitter. Well, I did put it out, but I said something wrong, so I had to delete it because I had some pretty bad grammar and shit out there. But
shocker.
I said I had the under in the game too, and I was tweeting people on the side saying take the under because the efficiencies of these offenses is just terrible, and it turned out to be exactly that. They were just kind of trading the ball around, going in between the 20s, and you know, the under cleared easily. You know, South Alabama cleared easily. It was a pretty good spot to take them.
Yeah, glad they got to the window. I actually was waiting to get 17 again, and I got 18, which I gladly took. All right, let's get into what we normally do here on part two of the Degen and Juice podcast, which you can always find on Sports Action, on Audio Boom. We'll also tweet out the link for you guys. The first segment that we always do is look ahead or look away. So these are some of the, you know, best situational spots from a look ahead or overlook perspective. So let's dive in first with Florida State. So Florida State's laying 7 at Duke. You know, I mean, they only have one win, so I don't know if they can really afford to be looking ahead, but, you know, their season's really shot compared to what they thought it would be. They lose a heartbreaker to Miami. They have Louisville on deck. They're laying a touchdown at Duke. Do they get up for this game at all?
Yeah, I actually have Duke in this game. I'm actually writing about them in my CW9 column. It's going to come out on Friday. So the thing about this is FSU has Louisville next on deck, but Duke actually has a decent defense. They're 7th in defense efficiency, while FSU is actually 120th. And FSU has really kind of been relying too much on the big play and the explosive plays. So, you know, Duke doesn't really allow, you know, things like that to happen. So I think 7 is good. I'm looking at the number right now. It looks like it's juicing up. It's going to tick up, and you can get 7.5. I wouldn't be surprised if it ticked up some more closer to kick on Saturday. So I would wait, and I would take Duke in this, and should be a cover. Should be a grind.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think it's a good time to, you know, Duke's going to be up for this game at home versus Florida State, and it's a good time to buy low on them after two straight losses, including one at Virginia. So how about the next spot here that I have written down, which is Tennessee. They're laying 3.5 at home. Another early kick for the Vols. They're laying 3.5 at home against South Carolina. So they are coming off a bye, but you know, their season is in shambles. They travel to Alabama on deck. They're playing South Carolina here. Do they get up for this game against the Cox team that's playing pretty good ball lately?
Yeah, I don't think that you have overlook to Alabama. I don't think you have overlook, period, when your coach is the number one on the list of every odds maker to be fired, especially when I think he was listed at -500 on Bet Online to be fired. So I don't think you really have overlook when you're, you know, when your coach is looking to be fired. But then again, I wouldn't be back in South Carolina here either. They've won some ball games this year where they didn't win the yardage battle. And the game against Arkansas, Austin Allen gave them so many, I mean, the interceptions, the fumbles. Arkansas gave South Carolina that game on a platter, and it got out of hand really fast. It was a tight game. It's only about a 2-point spread in Arkansas's favor. And then they just, you know, laid the ball in the field and let South Carolina do their thing. So South Carolina, to the, you know, just the visual eye to see the score, looks like they dominated Arkansas, but they were given a whole bunch of gifts, which has really kind of been South Carolina's MO this year. So for me, it's Tennessee or nothing.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Tennessee also has revenge from a game they lost last year. South Carolina shocked them at in Columbia, I think 20. They were up 20. I think they won 24-21. They're up 24-14. I would tend to agree. Early kick, though, you could get some ugly ball here, and Tennessee hasn't shown great things early, but I would tend to agree there. How about another one here? NC State, you know, this one is, you know, so they just came off a win against Louisville at home, right? They have their winners of 5 straight. They do have extra prep for this game, and they don't necessarily have a look ahead to any team next week because they have a bye. But here's the thing. After beating Louisville, they go to a Pitt team that's going to be missing Max Brown, who's out with an injury. But then they have a bye, and then they go to Notre Dame, and then they have Clemson. So it's like, are they looking already ahead to their bye and to Notre Dame and Clemson after 5 straight wins? And can Pitt kind of catch them sleeping a little bit? What are your thoughts here?
There's a lot to unpack here. First off, Max Brown's out. I would never take Pitt. This Pitt number reminds me exactly what happened earlier this year when Oklahoma State came to town, and it was the sharp play to take Pitt, even though they were tweening between 13.5 and 13 and 12, and everybody thought that was a play on a 11 a.m. Central kick.
Line's 11, right? Right around 11.
Yeah, yeah, it's 11 right now, and it's just one of these things where I think it just floats on a dead. It's like 12 at Bovada in Vegas and 11.5 at Cantor. But you know, NC State has the 28th efficiency ranked offense, and even in a sleepy part like this, I still think that they have enough to get it done, whether it's on the ground or even if they make mistakes. This Pitt team is horrible. I mean, they're terrible, and I can't throw any money behind them, especially when they lose their quarterback.
Fair enough. Yeah, the thing that'll keep me away is NC State does have a little extra prep, which can only help here. And like you mentioned, Max Brown is out. Next spot I have here is Michigan. So the Wolverines, after that stunning loss at home to Michigan State, you know, they now go on the road for Indiana. You would think that they would be focused after that loss, but then you look and you see they travel to Penn State next week. Does Indiana give them a second straight loss? I know we mentioned this on the first podcast earlier in the week. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I liked them in the first podcast. I said, yeah, I think Indiana beats them outright. I mean, Michigan has overlooked to Penn State. It's a huge game for the program. But then again, they played so bad. And Spates is out for the year now, so it's O'Korn's job. He's not under any pressure to try to make anything.
Can of corn.
Yeah, it's his job. He doesn't have to try to save the world, which I don't understand what the play calling was last week with the amount of deep balls that he was trying to throw, and he's just so careless with the ball, which is why he was never the starter in the first place. But in my opinion, Michigan has the number one defensive efficiency team in the nation, and Indiana is in the top 10 in limiting explosive plays. So everything that tells me is that there's going to be an under. So that gives value on the points for Indiana. Do they win? I don't know, but I'll definitely take 7 and above in a game that I think is going under.
Fair enough. And the last one, I have two more here. Maryland +3. This game is a disaster, by the way. Maryland and Northwestern. Maryland against Northwestern. I believe the Terps are +3 at home. Couple things to note here. The reason I have it in the look ahead section is they just came off Ohio State, a game at Ohio State. They got their doors blown off. They travel to Wisconsin next week. You know, sort of a sandwich spot at home against Northwestern. Two things to note here. Bortenschlager, their third string quarterback, is actually questionable. I don't even know who they would go to if he can't play. Maybe Van Pelt will step in and play quarterback. And then Northwestern, two of their better defenders. I mentioned this in the first podcast. I actually went and verified that both of them got targeting penalties in the second half last week. So both their safety and I think a linebacker are out for the first half of this game. Does this game just stay away? Is it too ugly, or do you have a feel here?
I can't back. Well, first off, I can't back Northwestern because their defense. Here's the deal: Maryland is built upon explosive plays and starting field position. They're actually top 20 in starting field position, and they're in the top 20 in explosive plays. But that's it. Everything else is very bad metrics for them, bad unit rankings. And the thing is Northwestern is not built to stop explosive plays. So I don't know really which team to take here. I just fear that my Northwestern win total over, I think I have 7. You know, I think that's done. I think it gets washed this weekend.
Yeah, I guess that's the only thing to root for here. I don't think I can get Bob. But I mean, unless I don't know what Maryland, I have to look in to see what Maryland's contingency plans are at quarterback. I can't believe their third string's now questionable. Last one I threw down here in the look ahead or look away section is for the degenerates here. So Fresno State, who I believe has covered every game this year, they are coming off two blowout wins over Nevada and San Jose State. I guess they pushed on San Jose State, depending on what number you got. They are home against New Mexico. The reason I bring this game up, you know, they're probably feeling a little confident. They have San Diego State on deck. New Mexico State is playing, you know, some good football the last couple weeks. You know, they won at Tulsa, and then they, you know, put 56 up against Air Force and beat them, by 20. They had a bye coming into this game. This game's right around a field goal. I think Fresno's laying 2.5 at home, and, you know, they do have San Diego State on deck. Is this a good chance to fade Fresno or stay away?
I actually am not going to be fading Fresno. I think I'm actually going to have them in my plays.
Interesting.
Their metrics are off. I mean, some of their mathematical numbers look so bad, but look at the schedule that they've had to play this year. It's not been. Would they start off with two playoff teams to start the year?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean,
well, besides Arnkin Ward, but yeah.
If, yeah. The silent playoff team from last year. no, the Fresno State, I mean, you can't look at their numbers based on math alone and say, oh, well, you know, this team is shit, because they're not. They're covering teams or beating teams. I mean, they were a double digit favorite last week. And I mean, the problem is the two of the first three games they played were against two playoff teams. So I don't take their numbers into account. And I think New Mexico caught a couple teams that weren't ready for the triple option dive. And that's why they've looked pretty good to date. So it should be interesting to see if Fresno's ready for that option offense, and if they can cover A, B, and C gap and do outside contain and see if they can cover this short spread.
Yeah, the playoff teams you mentioned, for people not familiar with their schedule, they played in the early, after they played Incarnate Word, they beat them 66-0 at home. They went to Alabama and lost 41-10 and covered. And then they went to Washington and lost 48-16 and covered, and then a bye. And then they won their last two games. A lot of, you could make an argument that those two games are going to help them, you know, in conference play down the line, which you might have seen after that bye against Nevada and San Jose State. So, okay. So you like Fresno there to keep their against the spread streak alive. Moving on to the next segment, we usually do FCS or no, which we'll look at the FCS versus FBS matchups of the upcoming weekend. Well, there are no FCS versus FBS matchups this week, so we'll switch it up and go with a section on letdown spots. Since we had two Power Five teams have with major upsets last week, the biggest being Iowa State against Oklahoma as about 30-point dogs. And then you had Michigan State upset Michigan as double-digit dogs. You know, Michigan State, they're going to Minnesota laying 4. I think, you know, it's a little easier to digest that fade, you know, than the Iowa State, who is, you know, unfortunately, they're hosting Kansas. And they're laying just over 3 touchdowns. They'll be with their backup quarterback will be under center again. I believe Kansas has all kinds of injuries in their defensive secondary. Do you fade both of these teams this week? One, neither? What are your thoughts on both of those letdown spots?
I would fade Michigan State, except I've taken Minnesota every single week of the 2017 season. So I'm finally going to hop off the Gophers track. So, but yeah,
so that means they're good. All right, I'm taking Minnesota.
Yeah, they're good to go because I'm off of them. So.
Can I take Kansas?
No, but you can next week. All right, so I want to save this till next week, but do a little homework for everybody that listens to the podcast. Go and see what Kansas has done to TCU the past 3 years, and then we'll talk about it next week, what they're going to do to TCU.
I mean, I was devastated when I saw the first thing that I always do when there's a huge upset in the making, and I will look. I'm like, all right, who do they have next week? And then I see Kansas at home. Oh man, I'm gonna talk myself into the Jayhawks, but they are playing. They're horrifying. Yeah, but I think both our starting cornerbacks are questionable. But I mean, this is the letdown spot of letdown spots for the Cyclones.
But it is an 11 a.m. kick too. If they only get a night game or a 2:30 game, it's one of those sleepy 11 a.m. games.
Oh man, I can't. This Saturday morning's gonna suck. Okay. So you're right. I'll be on Minnesota. Personally, I do like Minnesota. I think they're going to win outright. That's kind of a teaser for what we'll get into later. And stay tuned for, you know, Kansas might make it to the 6-pack, which is disgusting. It's that sounds like a skunked beer, but it might never make it in there.
Never bet on Kansas football. Never.
Let's see. Have they even covered yet this year? Let's see. Last year they. I mean, last week they got drilled. They gave up 70 to Texas Tech. The week before, against West Virginia, I guess they did cover, depending on what number got.
I got them 1-4 against the spread on the year, so.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, let's move on. That is as gross as it gets. I mean, any other team, I would have penciled in a fade of Iowa State, but with Kansas, I got to actually contemplate it a little more. All right, well, let's get into the third segment, which is our top 25 rundowns. We'll cover any of the games featuring top 25 teams that we didn't already cover. Let's start with TCU at Kansas State. TCU is laying 6 here. They're the only undefeated team in the Big 12. Kansas State's coming off a horrifying moose where they lost in catching 5.5, lost by 6 in double overtime. The Texas TCU escaped versus West Virginia at home. I believe Kansas State has, or TCU has, major revenge for a game they got blown out. I think they only scored 6 points at home last year. Yeah, they lost 30-6 last year to Kansas State. At first glance, I like Bill Snyder here catching six against an undefeated TCU squad. But what are you seeing here?
So Kansas State's quarterback Ertz is out for this game, and that's what's got me off Kansas State here. But I will say this about TCU. They rank 122nd. There's 130 teams. They rank 122nd in explosive plays allowed. And that starts the farther we get during the season, these numbers are starting to mean more and more. I mean, we are getting a bigger sample size, and we're looking into efficiencies and explosive plays and a lot of advanced stats. And I'm telling you, TCU is one of the worst in the nation in allowing big plays. And that's why a team like West Virginia was able to hang around all day against TCU. Now, I don't think Kansas State without Ertz is the team that's going to be able to hang around and finally put that loss up on TCU. But there's no way TCU skates through this schedule without getting nicked a couple times.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Yeah, that's a good point with Ertz being out. He went down. He came into the last game banged up, and then he went down. Their backup had to come in that game throughout. So something to keep an eye on. Next game I want to cover is Baylor at Oak State. Oak State laying 25.5 at home. Both these teams coming off byes. Poor Baylor can't catch a break in their schedule. What do you see here with Oak State Baylor from your numbers?
So Baylor is good at one thing. They're second in the nation in explosive plays, which is great because they're worst in the nation in average starting field position, which means they have lots of room to work with, which is why they're probably good in explosive plays. But
Oak State gives up a lot of explosive plays, right?
And they do, except Baylor's really bad in every other single metric when it comes to finishing drives off and points in the red zone. Baylor has been really not so good, pretty mediocre on the defense. It's kind of been hit and miss whether they've been playing Duke or whoever they've been playing. Besides that, Oklahoma State, 7th in explosiveness, 8th in efficiency. I'm not sure about covering the 25. The number is a little bit higher than what I have it put at. But at the same time, you know, I'm not going to lay it down with Baylor when there's been kids kicked off the team. There's just been so much of a culture shock that isn't X's and O's related down there, that I don't know what's going to show up each Saturday.
Yeah, it's a good point. But I will say, you know, Baylor, they do have the bye. I mean, Oak State's coming off a bye as well. But I believe they have a ton of injuries, though. Like, their KJ Smith, their D-end, is out. But I believe, yeah, Jamichael Hasty, their running back, comes back this week. He's up. Well, he's probable. And he hasn't played since the game versus Liberty. Terrence Williams, their other running back who was suspended, I believe he was also upgraded to probable. But they have a lot of questions on defense with injuries. So there are offensive backfield, which was a huge weakness with, you know, because of the suspensions and injuries. Looks like that'll be upgraded. But with defensive question marks against this Oak State team and no depth for Baylor this year, that might spell trouble. So you're staying away here?
Yeah, I'm staying away.
Next card I got here is Purdue at Wisconsin. Wisconsin going to keep rolling here. They're laying 16.5 at home. I don't see much here. How about you?
No, but this is a great time to promote the fact that on Tuesdays I'm going to put out a college football playoff top 25. So what's going to happen on Halloween is we finally get the Tuesday night college football playoff rankings. We have a new committee this year. We have a new chair of the committee. It's not the dumbass from Arkansas that gave Bielema a $15 million buyout. And so what you're going to get is their top 25 and, more importantly, the top four who would make the playoff. And then you get to find out who the group of five is, whether it's going to be San Diego State, UCF, South Florida. So what I'm going to produce on Tuesdays is my top 25 based upon power rating. And it will show you who would be favored over who on a neutral site. And I'm going to attach Five Dimes, Bet Online. I'm going to attach somebody's futures odds. And at the end of that column every Tuesday, I'm going to say this is probably a good time to buy Team X. If you want to get into the action and have a future on the national championship, this is a great time to buy it low on this team. And this week's team was Wisconsin. So that's how it applies to this game. Wisconsin's going to be double-digit favorites in every game from here on out, with the exception of Michigan, of course. If Michigan has a couple more losses, it could be a double-digit favorite for Wisconsin. But until they get to the Big Ten championship game, they're going to be favored huge. And it's a 25 to 1 that it was currently listed at Bet Online. Everywhere else was about an 18 to 1, 20 to 1 out there. Wisconsin, I don't see any losses coming up. And that Big 10 championship game serves as a quarterfinal. So this week, I'll just plug it. I think Wisconsin's a good time to buy because I don't think that number is going to get any better.
Fair enough. Another game here for the in the top 25, one of your marquee SEC matchups of the weekend, Auburn at LSU. LSU catching a touchdown at home. LSU coming off that one-point victory over Florida, which should have given them some confidence. And, you know, Auburn's been rolling lately. Interesting thing about this matchup is last year, Auburn won this game, I believe, at LSU 18-13 on 6 field goals, and Danny Etling had a touchdown pass to win it, but it was at, after time expired, if I'm recalling that game correctly. 7 feels a little high here, but Auburn's rolling. What are you seeing?
So my PR makes this game Auburn just a 2-point favorite, which I just kind of double-checked that, and I think, you know, what's LSU done this year? I had to obviously mark off their PR while Auburn's been on the rise. So, but I'm not wrong because S&P Plus also has this at 2.5. And if you follow ESPN FPI, they're laying this at 5, but nobody's as high as 7. So the number is obviously inflated for the home team, you know, that, you know, got away with a win last week. But, you know, Auburn, they're top 10 in defensive efficiency and explosiveness, and they're not allowing any opponents to finish drives past the 40. I don't want to back LSU. I don't believe in what Matt Canada's done so far, but for some reason the number just seems extremely fishy, and I think it's going to be one of those Auburn wins between 3 and 6 points. So I'm not going to lay LSU, although I probably should at this number. Just, you know, blind resumes. If I didn't see the team names, I would probably take LSU. But I probably will have Auburn square money-lined parlayed into a couple other things just because I just think they're so much better mathematically.
Fair enough. Arkansas-Bama, I think Bama has been 4 touchdowns up to 30. I think now, do they cover well, let me ask you this. Do they cover 40?
So, what does Saban want to cover? He's pretty pissed off that Texas A&M climbed back in that game, and he had some more things to say about that game today at his press conference. So I think he's motivated to put an ass whooping on Arkansas this week. Bielema has been quiet other years. He's shut, you know, kind of mouthed off about Bama, but he's been real quiet this week, not trying to feed any fires. So I think what's interesting today, we've talked before about groups that shape numbers. And I bought the Bet Online opener. It was around 20. It was 20.5, but I caught it at 29. Got up to 30.5, 31. And then today, Bookmaker took the thing all the way down to 27.5. And before the little ticker turned red and turned orange, I thought about, you know, heading on over to Bookmaker and get that 27.5. It rocket shipped back up to 30. So I think some of the shapers were getting in today and getting their 28 on. But, you know, as far as Arkansas goes, the only playmaker they have is Austin Allen, and he's beat up. He's questionable. He is going to play. They're saying he's just sore, but he has the worst offensive line in all of Power Five. It's not even close. And the line,
they can't stop the run, and you're going to play Bama. That's scary.
They can't stop the run. So, you know, short and sweet, what does Bama want to make this number? I think they're pissed off from A&M. So there's no way I would take an Arkansas number.
Yeah. I'm thinking about laying with Bama here. I think it's tied or nothing. Here's a game that a lot of people will be interested in. Oklahoma-Texas. Oklahoma laying over a touchdown feels a little expensive here. What are your thoughts?
It does, and I think it's undervalued. The number's spot on to my power ratings, but OU's first in offensive efficiency and 12th in explosiveness, and Texas isn't good in explosiveness at all. They're not good in defending explosiveness, and they're not good at explosiveness themselves. So what does that mean? That means if OU comes out just crazy and puts up 14 to start this game, Texas does not have the same latitude to score as fast as OU does. Now, weird things happen in this series. I mean, Texas
48-45 last week. Last year, I think.
Yeah, Texas is always an 11 to a 14 point dog, and they end up winning this game somehow.
Yeah.
So it is a strange series, but in this case, I think OU comes in actually undervalued and a little bit underrated, And I don't think Texas has the ability to come back on OU if they happen to get a big lead.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great time to buy low on Oklahoma if you're ever going to be able to do so this year. Here's a game we did not personally talk about offline, but I would imagine you're going to be on as long as you're not haunted too much from last week. Georgia Tech at Miami. The interesting thing, intriguing thing about this game is that last year Miami did beat Georgia Tech by 2 touchdowns, but Georgia Tech actually outgained them in that game, and they ran for 266 yards. Walton is out for Miami. That line is only 5.5. That line's screaming for Miami action. Georgia Tech off a bye. I think I'm loving me some Yellow Jackets this week. What do you see here?
Yeah, the number is short, but yeah, you're correct. It's screaming for Miami money. They lost Mark Walton. They lost their best running back, star running back Mark Walton.
I have their star receiver too is questionable as well.
Berrios?
No, well, he was their best receiver last week.
Say, the guy that's running around in my nightmares haunt me every night this week.
No, Berrios is going to play, but Amon Richards, who has been banged up all year, their number one coming into the year. He's injured. They have offensive linemen that are injured, defensive backs that are questionable as well. I mean, I think that I'll be on Georgia Tech here coming off the bye. Do you agree, or are you?
Yeah, I agree with that. And the one metric that I'll throw at everybody is Georgia Tech is 11th in defending explosive plays. So what that means is that Rozier and that offense is going to have to move the chains, and they're not going to be allowed to throw it down the field and hit people 25 yards, anything 20 plus. It's hangover city for Miami, but I will say this about the number. I think 5.5 looks extremely short, and there should be a wave of public money coming in Friday, probably coming in Saturday morning. So if I'm a Yellow Jackets buyer, I'm definitely waiting, because 5.5 doesn't mean shit.
Yep, fair enough. I mean, I think that I don't see it getting below 4, so it can't hurt to wait. Here's a game that reminds me of Alabama, Texas A&M. So Ohio State's looked so good. Now they go to Nebraska. They are laying 24. Nebraska's been terrible, but Ohio State's been so just – they're just been pristine the last few weeks. Nebraska, if they have any life, they're going to show up for this game. Not only are they playing Ohio State at home, they lost 62-3 to Ohio State last year. If they have any pride, they'll show up, and maybe Ohio State's a little flat here, just like Bama was at Texas A&M, where they let off the gas. I don't know. Is there any way that you could even look at Nebraska in this spot?
Yeah, actually, I'm considering
corn.
I'm considering corn and throwing them in the column. I do like the 24 and a halves I'm seeing out there, but you know, the number is inflated a little bit. I think I got it at 20 and a half. Let me check it real quick. No, I got it at 19, and S&P Plus has it at 19 and a half. The number is inflated, and I started doing some deep dive digging about, you know, what's going on here. And it turns out that Nebraska is actually 20th in allowing defensively 20th in explosive plays. So what does that mean for Ohio State? Last week when we got on this podcast, I said, yeah, I think they cover 30. I think they cover 40 on Maryland. And the reason was because Maryland was just so terrible at anything except having a big play of their own and then allowing big plays. Like they were so beat up in the secondary, and they were terrible at defending big plays, that I thought Ohio State was just going to be in sync and just go crazy. Well, now Ohio State goes on the road, and they actually play a defense that can defend the big play. So, you know, granted, Ohio State should be able to do whatever they want between the tackles, and their offense is in sync. I don't think they're going to be able to tear through Nebraska the way that they did Maryland. So I'm actually looking at plus 24.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, that's 62-3. And then it's one of those intuition things where it just feels like Nebraska will hang around, but you got to have balls going against State, but a lot of times you got to have balls to make money in this gig. So yeah, I'll be looking at Nebraska with you, and that 24.5 does look enticing. One other top five game I have here is Georgia. Do you want to get in front of Georgia? Georgia laying 30 just seems like high. I mean, Missouri finally got some stuff going on their offense last week, to be fair. They had a couple 75, 80-yard touchdown passes against Kentucky. I don't know if that was more of an indictment on Kentucky's defensive backfield or Missouri's offense getting it together. I believe Georgia beat Missouri last year 28-27. They had a touchdown with like a minute to go. I think that game was actually in mid September. This line at 30, after what I've seen, I don't want to get in front of Georgia, but then that makes me want to get in front of Georgia. But what are you seeing here with a spread of 30?
So the thing that I'm noticing is that Georgia is on a bye in the following week. So what does that tell me? And then they play Florida right after that bye week. So what this means to me is that they want to tuck this game away nice and neat and probably in the second half do exactly what they did to Vandy, which is just gain 8 yards per carry on the ground, don't do anything through the air, keep the play keep away, and keep a 2-touchdown lead. So you can take that two ways. You could say, well, I would take a under, but actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a first half on Georgia. And the reason is because I don't expect them to play anybody worth a crap in the third and fourth quarter, especially if they have a 2-touchdown lead, which leaves the back door. You got to sweat the back door if you got Georgia. You got to sweat the back door if you have Missouri, because this is a great defense. Even they're deep, too. I mean, so even the second-string defense, if they're playing in the fourth quarter, that's something that you have to sweat with Missouri. But for me, everybody's playing in the first half, and it's going to be an UGA first-half play for me.
So you think they just want to come out, get a big lead so that they can sit and get out?
Yep.
I mean, they're playing, Missouri's run defense is ranked 78th in the country. You're giving up 4.4 yards per rush, which can spell disaster against Georgia.
Yeah, no team is trying to cover a 30 going into a bye week before a rival, before the biggest game in their division. So I just think if they get up by 28 in the first half, they get up by 21 in the first half, they're not coming out and slinging the ball over the place. They're just trying to maintain and maybe win the game by 14. So
fair enough. Let's do some rapid fire here to round out the top 25. Give me who you'd like, and then at the end for the games that we go through, 4 or 5, I'll see if you have any commentary on any of them. So the ones that we didn't cover, Navy at Memphis -3.
Yeah, this is a 1-to-50 game. I can't say who I like in this game, but they're both high in efficiency and explosiveness. So to me, 75 is the total, but I don't know why you wouldn't take it over because it's a 1-to-50 game.
Sounds about right. Utah, USC -13. USC trying to get revenge from a game that they gave away at Utah last year. What do you see here?
So Utah has terrible efficiency numbers, and they had to scale back the playbook with Troy Williams. Tyler Huntley still listed as hurt. He is questionable. He did not practice today. So they might go with Troy Williams again. And for me, it feels like an under in this game because Utah's had to scale back what they do offensively, and then USC at the same time open up that injury report, and it's unbelievable. It's just a laundry list of names. For me, this is an under, and at most on a side, probably a USC first half play.
Fair enough. Washington at Arizona State catching 17.5.
Yeah, I can't back anything except Washington right now. Arizona State is negative yards per play differential on the year. I can never back a team doing that, and Washington's no look ahead. I think, they're on fire.
Yeah, Washington, number one rush defense in the country, 2.3 rush yards per attempt. Rounding out that top five, if anyone's interested, in South Florida, Northern Illinois, Alabama, and Michigan. Actually, the sixth on that list is Oregon. So they have the sixth best rush defense, and that's a good segue into the next game that I was going to cover. Oregon at Stanford minus, I think Stanford's laying, 10.5 here?
Yeah, the nice hook there in the end.
Yeah, 10.5, and Oregon does have, I can't figure Oregon out this year, but they do have major revenge from last year in a game. Stanford absolutely whooped them, I think 52-27-ish. What are you seeing here?
Again, you got to throw the math out because we're on our third string quarterback with Burmeister, the true freshman. They just couldn't get anything going against Washington State. And, Oregon's defense, as much as they're doing great with sacks, as great as they're doing in some other metrics, the one thing that I didn't count last week is the explosive plays allowed, and Leach and Falk were able to expose that. My problem with Stanford is Keller Chris getting the start. I was jacked 2 weeks ago about KJ Costello being the man there, and now Chris is healthy and Chris is getting the lion's share of the snaps, and for me, I'm staying off Stanford. I don't expect them to lose the game, and I don't expect them to lose any games coming up. But at the same time, I'm not looking for them to cover with Keller Christ under center.
Yeah, I think I would tend to agree with you there. And the other two top 25 games, do you see anything with Boise at San Diego State, San Diego State laying 7, and Cincy at South Florida, South Florida laying 24.5? See anything in either of those games?
Yeah, I'm taking Boise plus 7.5. So what you need to know is that for all of Boise's deficiencies and for me talking bad about them, they're actually 7th in the nation in limiting explosive plays, as to where that's all San Diego State does on the ground with Rashad Penny. So Boise will be the best defense that they face so far to date. I believe this was a close game last year. My number makes it 3.5, so I think 7 is way too many. And plus, if you look at it, the Aztecs live and die on the explosive plays because they're actually 113th in offensive efficiency, which means they're not very good at moving the chains. They're just really good at breaking big plays. So I think they're going to meet their match, and this game's going to stay close.
Fair enough. And just to kind of tie up a loose end on the top, the rush defenses, I gave the top five. The bottom five are, and these teams all give up over 5.8 yards per rush. Arizona State, East Carolina, Air Force, UCLA, and Tulsa. Tulsa's given up 6.8 yards per rush on this season. Air Force plays UNLV. Are we going back to the well of UNLV, or is that game just going to shatter? Air Force has given up 6.1 yards per rush on the season.
Not sure if I'm allowed to talk about UNLV anymore. I don't know. I might be.
Yeah, we might have to put a ban on that. Yeah. That's something I'll look at because I haven't hyped UNLV as much as you. But I might go back to the Rebels, but we'll see. Look out for that maybe on the six-pack. Cincy at South Florida, that's the last one, just to round out the top 25. South Florida minus 24.5 here. Anything worth betting?
There's no way I would step in front of USF right now, or UCF. I almost said UCF, but either of them, I'm not stepping in front of either of them right now.
Fair enough. Let's move on to our last segment, which is three and out, which we'll do two questions on first and second down. Then we'll do our Moneyline Underdog Parlay, and then we'll sign off here. Let's just go through key injuries. I mentioned last week that injuries become a big part of capping college football, especially as the season progresses and they start to pile up for a lot of teams, such as Miami, LSU. I think you mentioned USC, Kansas, Florida State. Mm-hmm. But let's go through some key injuries. You mentioned Austin Allen, Tyree Jackson for Buffalo. He's out. It looks like he's going to be out again. Kelly Bryant for Clemson, their quarterback. It looks like he's probable. Jesse Ertz for Kansas State, mentions out. Bortenslager for Maryland, their quarterback, questionable. Gus Ragland, quarterback for Miami, Ohio, looks to be doubtful.
That's a big one. Yep, that's a big one.
Big loss. Ryan Graham for Northern Illinois looks to be back, but he's still questionable. Then you have Larry Rose, the third for New Mexico State, probably their best player, their running back. He's questionable. Michigan State, speaking of the Minnesota game, I think all of their running backs are questionable. Something to keep an eye on. Max Brown for Pitt, we mentioned, out. Huntley for Utah is questionable. Those are some of the ones that I have here. What are some, do you have any other key injuries that you wanted to mention that I didn't hit?
Off the top of my head, you mentioned New Mexico State. This is their third road game in a row this week, so you're going to find them on the opposite end of a CW9 column. You mentioned Larry Rose, the third, being out. He's a big part of their offense. We need to find out what the quarterback situation is going on at Maryland. As far as USC goes, keep in mind that they have so many injuries, it's impossible to read them off. They got a wide receiver that's possibly Deontay Burnett, but tight end, running back, a couple starting defensive tackles, wide receiver, an offensive guard, defensive end. These are all starters. This isn't just, people in depth. These are starters that are coming off. So take a look at that. As far as anything else off the top of my head, I'm looking at Nebraska right now just before I, lay money on them, that Didrick Young, their linebacker's out. They got a wide receiver out. Two defensive backs are questionable. One is doubtful. So you definitely want to get some more information there before you lay money on them, especially if they're going to limit explosive plays, like I just said, against Ohio State. You want to make sure that their defensive backs are starting. So make sure and check your injury reports before you lay any, big numbers.
Yeah, I hear you say you're going to bet Georgia Southern this week. Ugh. Oh, my God.
Right, yeah. That's a hold your nose. So where's my goddamn clipboard? I'm not lying about this. So in the summer, like, I was bored in July. There's no Olympics. I don't really do hot dog contests and shit like that. But I did this whole research the past 11 years on teams in college football that are on back-to-back-to-back travel. So
I remember weeks. asking you for that, see if we could get that early in the year or not.
Yeah, so I had one team out of 13 spots that it actually covered when it was, there wasn't a bye week. There wasn't some sort of neutral site involved. I'm talking three consecutive true road. Yeah. I found one winner in a span in a sample size of about 14 or 15.
Interesting. I mean, it makes sense. I love when there's a trend that's not just, you know, that also has causality. And it's not just, random correlation. Who was the one team out of curiosity? Do you have it written down?
You know, and I think it was a Fun Belt team. I got to look it up. Probably, you know what? I might post this.
Probably against Georgia Southern.
I'll post it on my Twitter if I find it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So like we said, keep an eye out on the injuries. Second down, we had a couple of people ask about this through Twitter when I summoned some questions for the podcast, and that's about your power numbers. So you just want to give like a minute or two, we'll try and cover this throughout the year, but just of like how you come up with them and then how you adjust them, from a week to week basis, mainly for anyone that's looking to possibly do this in the future on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody should know, like, I didn't just wake up one morning and start doing this. I actually, you know, I've been flying out to Vegas for quite some time and making friends with people that actually worked on the other side of the counter. And, you know, I wouldn't go in there and ask for, you know, tell me your best story. My question would be, hey, before you post these college football numbers, I want to know exactly what it is, the conversations that you're having with your risk management team and how you guys are setting these numbers. Because, you know, everybody always thinks, hey, that number's phony, or hey, that number's just a trap. And I'm like, no, actually, it's a mathematical equation, and it gets moved based upon injury or public perception, because that's all it is perception. But let's talk about what I do. So my power ratings, we can talk about off season and what I do with that another time. That's a really long story. But week to week, what I do is I take the closing line number. And if the closing line number is different than what I had the number at, then obviously I have to make adjustments. So a good example of that is Tulsa the last couple of weeks. Their number got moved 7 to 9 points against New Mexico, against Navy. It was pretty embarrassing that their number ended up closing nowhere close to where it opened and nowhere close to where I had the number. So what I have to do is take a deep dive into the box score. I look at who won total yards, who won first downs. What do the net turnovers look like? Who had the explosive plays? I adjust the PRs for each team based upon the one question floating around in my head is, what would Vegas make this line again if they played this game tomorrow? So that's the reason why, like, Iowa State just beat Oklahoma. Well, Iowa State's not in my top 10 in PRs. They're not even in my top 20, right? I mean, they do get a little bump, but it's never more than a half point, 2 points. But, you know, Michigan may lose to Michigan State, but, you know, they had 5 turnovers last week, and that masks what happened, you know, in between the goal lines. So conversely, you know, when UCF runs 600 yards up on somebody and the closing line was 6 points off, I might early in the season add 4 or 5 points to Central Florida and dock the team that they just, you know, ran circles around, that they boat raced. I might dock 1 or 2 points off of them because they truly probably aren't that bad. So I always adjust the two teams based upon the box score, and I make it close to the closing line. And then I ask myself, what would Vegas make this line again if they played again? And that's it.
And yeah, so it's a lot of box score reviewing, keeping up with a lot of the games. Yeah. So thanks for the insight there. And the main thing that you're worried about is against the closing line, right? So sometimes,
yes.
So that's I think a distinction that we want to make here is that that's really the focus is on what the closing line is. But yeah, it's a lot of time not only coming up with the numbers, but then in the adjustments, I think the most important thing is, you know, there can be 60 games on a Saturday. You can't just say, all right, let me look at what the actual score was for all 60. Mm-hmm. You have to dive into the box score, look at turnovers, look how it played out, to really get a sense of, okay, do I need to adjust any of these numbers?
How much of that was a pick six? How much of that was a kickoff return for a touchdown, right? I mean, you have to look at all of that.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, if your team's dominating and then they fumble 3 times and, you know, inside the 10, you know, that's not going to be reflected in the actual score. But if you, you know, kind of get into the box score, that's something that you can account for. That's kind of just scratching the surface of that. We'll get into more of that in future podcasts. So let's get to third down before we sign off here. Let's get to our Moneyline Dog Parlay. So we're 0-3. We've come kind of close, but not really. I'm looking to try and hit one of these over the course of 10 weeks. You're not allowed to do UNLV this week. That's my only rule. Who are you going with here for your Moneyline Dog?
I am going to pass over Boise and UAB. They were on my list. I'm going to go with Idaho. I'm going to go with Idaho hosting App State. We've talked about App State on the pod before, that they've had to have two fourth quarter comebacks now for New Mexico State and for somebody else.
I can't believe they covered that game versus App State. I was amazed. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Texas State, too. They weren't covering Texas State for the longest time playing them either. Something's going on with Yosef, and they're, you know, I was looking into their deep into their numbers, and I find out that their offense efficiency is like 101st, and they're relying exclusively on explosive plays. They're 10th in the nation explosive plays, but Idaho is 21st in defending explosive plays. So I think that they finally met their match this week. So I'm taking Idaho. It's plus 390 and, it's a 13 point side. So
nice. That's nice and fat. And that game's being played in Russia, in Moscow.
Moscow. Idaho. Yeah.
Neither team has anybody on the injury report. Just keep that in mind. So there's nothing really to monitor there. I'm going with Minnesota. So you're didn't go Minnesota. I'm going to,
You saw what happened last week, right? You do know what happened last week.
Yeah, but that did you read my Moose piece? That the under was in one of them. That pick six cost the under. That game was like 16-15 with or 15-14 or something with like 2 minutes to go, and then there was like 30 points in the last 2 minutes. But yeah, that was brutal.
Somebody tweeted my CW9 right after Minnesota threw that pick six, and they said you should burn this. You should burn this doc. Print it and burn this document.
fair enough. Yeah, so I'm going Minnesota. They're catching 4 against Michigan. I said before, they have a number of injuries, and they're coming off that big win over Michigan. So, yeah, I'm going with the Gophers here to recover after two pretty bad losses to Maryland and Purdue. That pays out, what pays 390-160. That pays about 12-1. This is the one we're hitting, I think. I'll say that again next week if we don't. But, yeah, so Idaho, you know, the Vandals and the Gophers pays out about 12-1. Hopefully we can get this one this week. Thanks for sharing your thoughts, Colin. Look out for the CW9 on Friday, the six-pack on Saturday, Sunday morning coffee on Sunday morning. And as Colin alluded to earlier, the new weekly piece that he'll be doing is the updated kind of playoff standings, power ratings, and looking into any future ads. Added Wisconsin at 25-1 earlier in the week. If you have access to Bet365, I think you can find a 28 or 30-1, FYI. So, yeah, this will come out on Thursday. Look forward to two more podcasts for week 8 of the Jen and Juice next week. Hope we can all have a profitable weekend, and we'll catch you all later. Cheers. Some sequins gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this time.